come alive, come alive in my body, dream, come alive.
Hey there, this is Molly Patrick, and you are listening to episode 25 of the Clean Food Dirty Girl podcast. What's up? So happy to talk with you today. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. This is an episode all about soy. And I talked to a wonderful woman named Brenda Davis. Maybe you've heard of her. She is a registered dietitian. She's been an RD for over 30 years, and she knows her stuff. And she's co-authored many books, and she has done many talks around the world. She's done a lot of wonderful work in her career. And she and I sat down and talked all about soy, and I really brought up all of the reasons that I see people give for either avoiding soy or being afraid of eating soy. And she just kind of debunks it. She really gets down to business. She's very passionate about this. She's very animated, and you can just hear it even in her voice. And she knows her stuff, man. So if you've ever wondered, like, oh, should I be eating tofu? Is it going to give me cancer? Will it give my husband man boobs or partner man boobs? If your partner is a man, like, this is a really good one. She clears up all of it. And we really talk about how there's so much fear-mongering about soy. And at the end of the day, soy is like a bean, just like a black bean or a pinto bean. Could you imagine people being so afraid of a pinto bean? Like, it's funny when you think about it in that context, but, you know, soy is the same. It's a soybean, right? Tempeh and tofu and soy milk, they're all minimally processed versions of the little soybean. It's like such an innocent little bean that gets such a bad rap. And I mean, I have loved soy my entire life. I grew up drinking soy milk and eating tofu and eating tempeh. And, you know, and then it's been such a part of my diet since I was little that I never grew up with this stigma around it. I just grew up thinking it was really like everybody ate it. My mom would make me, when I was little, instead of fish sticks, she would make wish sticks out of tofu and kind of slice slabs of tofu and do a breading of like cornmeal and some flour and some spices and then pan fry them. And she'd whip up her own tartar sauce, and man, they were delicious. And so I just grew up thinking it was normal. And then as I got older, I just kept eating it. And I didn't really realize until I was probably in my 20s that, and you know, and then my late 20s, I didn't really realize how, I don't know, just how much people feared it. And I was like, wait a minute, what? I never heard that this was bad, you know? And so, and we, you know, there's a lot of tofu and tempeh in our meal plans. And I think it's a great food because it really, it can be very helpful for people who are transitioning away from eating meat, because it gives this texture that people can really bite into, right? And like sink their teeth into. And so I think it's a very helpful food for people, especially when transitioning, but also it's just delicious for anybody. When it's made the right way. Like, okay, I've had some tofu that's not great. And it's because tofu is very neutral actually in taste. And so it's kind of like a sponge. It'll take on the flavor of whatever else you're cooking it in or with. And so you do have to kind of have a good recipe or know what you're doing to make tofu delicious, because I've had it just horrible. Have you ever been to like a restaurant where some tofu is on the menu and they literally just cut a piece of tofu and put it on a grill and grilled it and put it on a plate with some veggies? I've had that happen. I'm like, no. But if you do it right, my goodness, it's so delicious. And I thought it was really interesting. And I've talked about this before. I think it was episode 5. I talked with Luann, my wife, about this, because she's from Malaysia, from in Southeast Asia. And when you go to a restaurant, it's so common that you see tofu on the menu, but with, like, it's not a substitute for meat. It's just part of the dish. So there'll be a dish that has some kind, you know, like veggies and fish and tofu all in it together, right? It's just part of the cuisine. It's just an ingredient that they use with everything else. It's not so much like a substitute. You know, here it would be pretty rare to find tofu at a restaurant if that restaurant wasn't a plant-based restaurant. Like, you can't go into a normal, like a whatever average restaurant and expect to have tofu on the menu. But in Asia, like, that's what you see, and it's so cool because it's just, it, everybody eats it, and there's not that conversation around it. I mean, if I order it, no one's going to be like, oh, you know, that's strange, or that's not good, or it's just an accepted part of, it's just an accepted food group, or food ingredient, not food group, but food ingredient in the Asian culture. And that, to me, I found really refreshing, and it was a definite shift in perspective, because I had always seen tofu as, I mean, not so much when I was little because I didn't know any better, but as I got older, I saw tofu as sort of a substitute for meat. And it was cool to experience a culture that it was just part of their diet, part of what they ate on an average day, along with everything else. So anyways, that's a little tofu backstory. But anyways, my love for soy runs deep, and I was really happy to talk with Brenda Davis about this, for her to really just clear up some of the fears that people have around soy. So anyways, enjoy our talk. It is a great one to share with anybody who is curious about eating a plant-based diet and has heard that soy is bad. Okay, let's let Brenda Davis clear that up. I'll see you on the other side. So I was thinking about this, and because I wanted to get the most like out of this, because I love having this opportunity to talk with somebody who's so knowledgeable in this field. So when I was thinking about it, like, I was thinking about the questions that I get asked the most, and just that come up the most in the Clean Food Dirty Girl community. And, you know, soy is something that comes up all the time. And even people who are eating a healthy, you know, plant-based diet are still either like afraid to eat it because of lots of reasons, which I'm sure we'll get into, but just, it seems to be this constant thing that comes up. And when listening to people's questions and their concerns about it, it's like, it's amazing that there's such fear in people over like a bean, you know what I mean? So I really wanted to address that. And I thought the best way to do that was, I asked in my private Facebook group, like, you know, for those of you who avoid soy, can you tell me the reasons why? And what I thought would be interesting, just to hear from people who avoid it, who are afraid of it, just to hear why, and then maybe read some of those to you and have you address them. Does that sound like it would work for you?
Absolutely.
Perfect. Okay, so I'm just going to start then, and let's see. Do you have any questions before we get started at all? Are you good to go?
No, I'm good to go.
Awesome. Okay. So the first question, and we're going to have, I mean, I think that a lot of people have kind of, it's probably like the same five concerns at the core, wouldn't you say? But, I mean, is that something that you've seen, basically like the same kind of few concerns with soy?
Oh, absolutely. Because where the concerns stem from is pretty much one or two places from the internet.
Yes.
And so
yes,
they're fueling the fears, constantly fueling the fears. And these organizations like Weston A. Price Foundation and these organizations are really strongly animal-centered eating organizations.
Yeah.
They don't want people being vegan. They say the only people that shouldn't breastfeed their babies are vegans. I mean, they're so anti-vegetarian, anti-vegan, and they have really instilled a lot of fear in people about soy. And so I think it's all coming from the same place, so it's all the same concerns that we're hearing over and over again.
And it's the same couple of places, because it seems like the Weston A. Price Foundation, right? It seems like every article that I find about, like, why soy is bad and why you should, you know, be afraid of it, like, it all, you're right, it all goes back to that website. And so what do people need to know about that website, first of all? I mean, we're not going to get to, like, we'll just wait getting to the questions, because I think that this is a great place to start. Yeah. So the Weston Price Foundation, what can you tell us, like, a little bit about that foundation and how they make money and why this like scaremongering happens with that organization?
Well, the organization, I think the intentions originally of Weston A. Price, who was a dentist, mm-hmm. were really very, very sensible. I mean, he was looking around the world and noticing various things in different populations, and people that didn't eat a bunch of crappy processed foods did really well in comparison to those eating heavily processed foods. But they've gone off on a different tangent, and they still recommend a very sort of traditional unprocessed food, but with 50% plus of calories from fat, most of it coming from animal sources. They're just very anti-vegetarian. So that's the direction they've gone in. I'm not sure that Weston A. Price would have necessarily approved of that himself. Yeah. But that's just the general direction. And the leaders, Marianne Egg and Sally Fallon, are both very, very much promoting sort of the free-range animal diet.
Right.
And so that's basically the group. But they're highly anti-vegetarian, highly anti-soy.
Yeah. When people are reading these articles, because there's so many of them on the internet, like, it's really important that they look and see, like, look at the research, because a lot of articles don't even link to studies at all. They don't link to anything. It's just kind of their opinion. Yeah, go for it.
Just to be aware also that most of the studies that show a negative impact of soy are animal studies, and they don't mm-hmm. metabolize soy the same way humans do.
Right.
And so there are certain animals that just don't process it very well. And
right.
so they don't do well with soy, which is no big surprise, but we're not rats or mice.
Right,
exactly. And our bodies process soy quite, quite differently.
Right, yep, excellent point.
And to be honest, there's probably no single food that has been more studied than soy.
Right.
We have reams of information. We have absolutely reams and reams of it. So I'm really happy to be talking about it.
Yeah. So let's do it. So I'm going to go over to some of these questions here, and I'm just going to start with there. I just posted this like a half an hour ago, and it blew up. There's so many people. I mean, I think this is a great thing to do, because there's so many people who are just still kind of in the dark about this. So the first one is, okay, so Natalie says, not afraid personally, but I see a lot of talk about its poison for those with Hashimoto's and autoimmune conditions.
Well, the concern in terms of, Hashimoto's or any thyroid issues are really simple. Soy contains goitrogens.
Yeah.
And many foods contain goitrogens. Cruciferous vegetables contain goitrogens. Strawberries contain goitrogens. Yams contain, or sweet potatoes. Flax seeds, all kinds of healthy foods contain naturally occurring goitrogens. They are not an issue for most people if you are replete in iodine. So if your iodine status is okay, generally the goitrogens you can deal with in any of these foods.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a condition, a thyroid condition where you need medication, for example, then I would watch my intake of goitrogens, period. But first I would make sure that my iodine status was reasonable.
Right.
With autoimmune diseases, there is very little research that I've ever come across showing that soy increases your risk for autoimmune disease.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure where that's coming from.
Okay.
But those are probably of all of the issues that are raised regarding soy. The thyroid issue is probably the one that we do need to be conscious of because mm-hmm. of the goitrogens naturally present.
Mm-hmm.
But there, like I say, there are so many other foods that can be an issue for. one thing in a vegan diet, when people are trying to eat a really clean, healthy diet, they tend to reduce their intake of processed foods, which includes iodized salt.
Right.
And some use iodized sea salt, but in for most of us, salt is one of the key contributors to our iodine intake, and especially if we're not consuming seaweed, you know, I mean, there's a little bit in vegetables, depending on the soil it was grown in and so forth. Mm-hmm. But in sea salt, there's almost none. It evaporates when we dry it, unless it's iodized.
Right.
So, we really do need to be conscious about our iodine status, mm-hmm. and make sure there's a source of iodine in the diet.
Mm-hmm.
Because goitrogens will have a lot greater impact if we don't have enough iodine.
Right.
So I think that's just to be aware of.
Yeah, and that's a great thing. So is iodized sea salt your recommended way for getting iodine into the diet?
Well, it depends on the person. So mm-hmm. so if you're a sodium sensitive person, or you have high blood pressure, you're really wanting to, I mean, everybody should be limiting their intake of sodium, but of course 75 or 80% of our sodium is coming from processed foods. So
right.
if you're eating a whole food sort of plant-based diet, you're going to be consuming less sodium.
Right.
But for those people who, need to restrict sodium, you're not going to be wanting to use salt.
Yeah.
So I think for those people, you're going to be wanting to use kelp powder, and you have to be careful about how much you use, because the
right.
upper limit for iodine is 1,100 micrograms a day. So you're not going to be using a teaspoon. You're going to be using a tenth of a teaspoon
right.
or something like that.
Right.
Because what we need is about 150 micrograms a day. So, mm-hmm. so you know, that's probably a safe way to do it. Otherwise, you can use a supplement. You
mm-hmm.
can use a multivite that contains 150 mm-hmm. micrograms of iodine a day, or just a straight iodine, you know, drops or something like that would be a reasonable option as well. But because some people don't like seaweed and they don't like the taste of it, and, you know, so it's hard for them. So those are really the main sources. If you're, not a vegan, you're going to get some from other foods, seafoods and milk
right.
and so forth.
Right.
But for vegans, we do need to be cautious about getting a source.
Yep, getting iodine. So that's great. So if you have thyroid conditions, it's make sure that you're getting your iodine, and that's a great place to start. Okay, so the next kind of comment we had is, okay, it was another one about thyroid, so we already got that one. Okay, scaremongering around estrogen levels being affected by soy, it worries me as I have polycystic ovary syndrome. Okay, so this question was repeated many, many times. So Erica says the estrogen found in soy and how it impacts our bodies, both male, lowering testosterone levels, and female, causing breast cancer. So this one is the most frequent that I hear about. So let's talk about the estrogen, the breast cancer scare. There's a lot of people a lot of women who have had breast cancer, and their doctors say, you know, avoid it after cancer. So let's get into this.
Okay, so let's talk about, first we'll talk about breast cancer, we'll talk about prostate cancer, and then we'll talk about, you know, what these estrogens in soy really are and how they affect our body.
Great, okay.
So first of all, breast cancer. There are several things that we used to think that the estrogens in soy would act like weak estrogens and increase our breast cancer risk. And all of the oncologists would say, don't consume it if you have breast cancer. It may, especially if you're on tamoxifen, it may increase your risk and so forth. So what we know now is that the exact opposite is true. So this is what we know. We know that children and adolescents who consume soy during their childhood, who are female, have a significantly lower lifetime risk of breast cancer,
mm-hmm.
number one. Number two, we know that Asian women who consumed soy as children and so forth
mm-hmm.
have just generally, the more soy they consume, the less breast cancer they have.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing we know is that we know Western women who consume soy when they have breast cancer
mm-hmm.
actually have less recurrence of the cancer and lower death rates from the cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So now we know it's protective. In 2012, because of the research that came out in 2012, the American Institute of Cancer Research came out with a statement saying, we no longer have to worry about telling women not to consume soy. In fact, it's probably protective. And if they're on tamoxifen, it makes the tamoxifen work even more effectively. So that's what we know now. Anybody that says otherwise has not read the literature for 5 or 10 years, because the information is absolutely overwhelming. Mm-hmm. Not only that, but there's a study from Korea that came out in, I think it was 2013, that showed that the highest consumers, the people who were in the highest quartile of soy intake, who were BRCA1 and BRCA2 carriers, who consumed the most soy, had a 61% risk reduction in cancer. Those consuming the most meat had a 197% increased risk of breast cancer.
Wow, that's incredible. Okay? Yeah.
So the evidence, as I say, is absolutely overwhelming. Looking at people with estrogen-positive breast cancer versus estrogen-negative, in both of them, the reduction in recurrence and the reduction in death rates was about the same for both, for the highest soy consumers. So there is absolutely no question that soy is protective, at least for Asians. It is for Western girls and adolescents who are consuming. So you're consuming it through your whole life. It will be protective, and it will reduce death rates, and it will reduce risk of recurrence of the breast cancer. No question.
It's amazing go ahead. I was just going to say, it's just so opposite than what most people think. So I'm so glad that you're clearing this up. And I'm going to ask you about these studies, because they are fairly new, right? So go on. So now let's talk about males, and then we'll get to the actual studies.
There have been a lot of studies, and the studies looking at prostate cancer in men, the highest soy consumers have about 30% less prostate cancer. And those that are considered at very high risk, one recent study that just came out showed a 51% risk reduction for males consuming the most soy. So it's highly protective against prostate cancer as well.
And these are all studies done in actual people and not in animals, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. These are studies done in people. And if you go to PubMed, look up breast cancer and soy intake. They're just all there. The evidence is overwhelming. And many of the studies originally were done on Asians, and they were very positive. And then when we did the studies on Western women, we didn't see the same. If we looked at intake of soy in adulthood and your risk of breast cancer, it didn't seem to affect risk either way. But for those people that grow up eating soy, it does affect lifetime. It's very protective. So to say that there's any problem with soy in those consuming breast cancer is irresponsible, and because it would actually increase risk rather than it would increase risk if you're telling people not to consume soy,
right?
When we know it increases our chance of survival,
right?
And our rate of recurrence. So it's just it makes me you can tell I'm passionate about this. It makes me angry that we're putting people's health at risk, and especially makes me angry when vegans get convinced not to consume it because of the fear mongering of the animal or the meat pushers. That is just, it's really sad.
It is, because it's such an important source of protein, for one, I think. And it's like that when people get set in that mentality, because there's a lot of people in our group who used to be like paleo. So they went from being like kind of paleo to more like, plant-based, vegan. But it's still that mindset of soy is bad, soy is bad. So it really does get ingrained. And it's almost like the dieter's mindset, right? Because there's a lot of people in our community who, tried every single diet out there, and we're so used to counting every single calorie. And then, when they don't, it's like they almost feel like there's something missing. So it's just these patterns that are ingrained in our head. But I think like looking at these studies and realizing that these studies are, the most up-to-date studies done on humans, and it's okay. It's more than okay. So I'm so glad that you're addressing it. And I'm so glad that you're passionate about it, because we need that. So thank you.
Oh, it, You know, it's so important that we recognize not only for cancer, mm-hmm. but we know that soy is protective against kidney disease. When you replace animal protein with soy protein, you dramatically reduce risk of kidney disease. You reduce risk of cardiovascular disease. Mm-hmm. So there are a number, you know, you reduce risk of diabetes. There are a number of benefits from switching from animal protein to plant protein. And the thing about soy is it's the most versatile and one of the most delicious sources of mm-hmm. plant protein. So when you have tofu and tempeh and these kinds of things, and you can use tofu as a sort of meat substitute or as a dairy substitute mm-hmm. in a cheesecake or something like that, it's a really quite a wonderful food. But not only that, it's the most really high quality protein. It's mm-hmm. it's very high in the amino acids that are lower in a lot of other plant foods. Mm-hmm. So it's got a quality of protein that's similar to animal protein.
Yeah.
The iron and the zinc and the other nutrients there are also, you know, it's rich in those nutrients yeah. that can be tricky.
Yeah.
And the other thing is for children, when they're eating a plant-based diet that's very high in fiber and very bulky,
mm-hmm.
this is sort of lower fiber, especially tofu, way to add in super absorbable protein, because the protein in plant foods is probably 10, 20, 30% less digestible mm-hmm. than it is in meat because of the fiber there.
Mm-hmm.
So in something like tofu, you remove the fiber, you make that protein super absorbable, and it's a wonderful thing for growing children, for pregnant and lactating women, for seniors who have a higher protein requirement
uh-huh.
per kilogram body weight than what younger adults do, because their digestive, their ability to assimilate is further reduced by the aging process. So there are a number of reasons why tofu would fit into the diet of all plant-based, unless you're allergic to it. But
right.
for others, I think that we really need to recognize the value of soy.
Yeah.
And then the other thing I do want to address, though, when we're talking about soy, is there are, like all foods, there are variations in quality of soy.
Mm-hmm.
And so, for example, one of the things that people get concerned about is organic versus, you know, genetically
yes.
modified
yep.
soy. And the way to avoid, if you want to avoid GMO, is just to purchase organic soy, and
mm-hmm.
I would say the majority of soy yeah. that's available for purchase for people is organic, because
mm-hmm.
we've demanded that. But you need to look at the package. The other thing is that the isoflavones in soy that are potentially protective to human health, by the way,
mm-hmm.
are more concentrated in whole soy foods like
right.
edamame, even tofu, tempeh,
mm-hmm.
soybeans,
mm-hmm.
of course. These kinds of foods, and even soy milk made with whole organic soybeans.
Yeah.
But in veggie meats, for example, they're much lower in the isoflavones.
Right.
But these highly processed foods are also richer in added fats and salt and things like
right.
that. So you want to limit your use a little bit more. Now, the other thing is that when we make a burger or something like that from soy, we take a whole soy food and we extract the protein.
Uh-huh.
And in order to extract the protein, sometimes we use a chemical called hexane.
Right.
And hexane is it's a neurotoxin, essentially.
Yeah.
It's not a good thing. The claim is there's none left, but the studies, show otherwise, that there may be traces. We don't know how much is
right.
is okay. The way to avoid hexane in soy burgers and so forth, again, is to buy organic, because they can't use hexane to extract the protein in organic.
So they can't use hexane in organic products.
No.
I did not know
they
that.
Do not,
that's great to know.
Yeah, they don't use it for the extraction. So again, if you stick to organic, you avoid that particular issue. And of course, you're wanting to eat a more whole food diet, so
right.
you want to limit your intake of these highly processed foods. Now,
yeah.
the thing I'd love for you to know about, soy is, and these estrogens in soy, is that soy estrogens are not, they're not just weak estrogens. We often think of them as being very much like human estrogen, but just weaker version.
Okay.
And that's not an accurate picture. It's
mm-hmm.
true, they're They're very different. For example, we have two receptors. First of all, soy is called a selective estrogen receptor modulator.
Okay.
And which means there are two different types of estrogen receptors in the body. Okay. There's alpha estrogen receptors and beta estrogen receptors. Mm-hmm. And the beta estrogen receptors tend to be quite protective against, you know, cancer and so forth. They tend to be more protective when estrogen attaches to these receptor sites. It's less of an issue. Well, soy favors the beta estrogen receptors. Mm-hmm. And the other interesting thing is if you've got estrogen, you know, you're attaching to estrogen receptors, mm-hmm. the soy will attach to different receptors in different parts of the body. And so in breast tissue and in, you know, the sort of female tissue, where we're concerned about female cancers, it tends to attach to estrogen receptors that are more protective. It's more like it functions like a weak estrogen. Uh-huh. And yet in other tissues, like in bone, there's some thinking that it attaches to estrogen receptors to make it more like a weak estrogen, whereas in breast tissue, it acts more like an anti-estrogen.
Okay. Okay.
So in the breast tissue, when phytoestrogen attaches to an estrogen receptor, human estrogen can't attach there. So it's reducing the impact of the type of estrogen that encourages the proliferation of cancer cells.
So it kind of acts like a chameleon. And so it'll go, so the areas that where it needs to go, it'll go there for the most protective benefits and vice versa is what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. It's really quite interesting. And so what the other thing that I want everybody to just hear, and this is really important.
Okay.
You've probably heard of the blue zones.
Uh-huh. Yep.
The blue zones are for those people that have never heard of them. The blue zones are actually places in the world where people live the longest, healthiest lives.
Yeah.
So not only are there the most centenarians or people that live to be 100 on the planet in these locations, when they reach these advanced ages, they're actually thriving. They're still productive, reasonably healthy, brain functioning, they're in their gardens, they're doing things.
Yeah.
And so if you look at their five blue zones, there's Okinawa, Japan, Loma Linda, California, the Seventh-day Adventist Vegetarian, mm-hmm. Sardinia, Italy, Ikaria, Greece, the Nicoya Peninsula, and Costa Rica. Two out of these five blue zones are regular soy consumers.
Mm-hmm.
Okinawa averages two servings a day in the traditional Okinawan diet,
mm-hmm.
and Sardinia is, or I'm sorry, not Sardinia, but the Loma Linda, California is probably around the same
mm-hmm.
amount.
Mm-hmm.
So just think about this. If, in fact, soy was so poisonous, would it be likely that two of the five blue zones on the planet would be consuming that much soy?
Yeah.
I mean, they wouldn't be among the longest-lived people. And to me, the blue zones are really like an acid test.
Mm-hmm.
And the acid test, it provides definitive, an answer to whether or not soy is this horrible poison killing people.
Right.
If it was, they'd be dead at 50, not at 105.
Right. Great. Good. Yes. So things to think about. That's awesome. Glad that you brought that up. Fantastic. So let's, I'm going to go back to a few more questions here. The concerns are still coming in. So let's go to, so a lot of people seem to have, the reason why a lot of people don't consume it is because they get really bloated or they are allergic or it makes them feel very nauseous or very sick. So it seems like, soy allergies are something that quite often people deal with. So what do you think about that?
Okay, so what I would say for people that really are very sensitive, that get very bloated, that I would say, you know, you don't have to have soy in a plant-based diet. You can certainly do very well with the 14,000 other kinds of legumes that are available on the planet. So it's not a necessity. It's just, to me, it's something that's wonderful to be able to include and to be able to eat some tempeh or some tofu. Now, that having been said, I would try with these people to see if edamame is a problem, organic edamame.
Yeah.
Try that. See if you respond to that. And if not, then incorporate that. Try tempeh, which is a fermented soy product. See if you respond to that and see if there are any of the soy products that you enjoy and would like to include that don't bother you. So, you know, it may be more the veggie burgers and those things. It may be more the tofu for whatever reason that causes you problems. Mm-hmm. But you know, again, be flexible and go with what your body's telling you.
Yeah.
Certainly you don't need to eat tofu.
Yeah. And I think, what do you think about elimination diets, just for people to see really what is causing allergies? Because I think that there are a lot of people who that definitely deal with different allergies, but sometimes just knowing for sure what that is, because it might be soy, but it could be something else in your diet as well. Right.
So absolutely.
Doing an elimination diet could be a good way to kind of do that. So people can do this on their own, right? An elimination diet to try to get to the root of their allergies.
Yes. And what some people can do, I mean, a true elimination diet is very few foods. You start out with four or five foods and you slowly add them one back at a time and see what your body response is. But you can do a sort of a modified elimination diet where you select the foods you think you're probably sensitive to. So for an omnivore, they might select dairy and gluten and, you know, the things that tend to have a greater risk of being potential allergens. And so for someone who's vegan, they might choose, you know, soy, and they might choose some nuts, or, you know, they might choose things that are more, have a higher association with allergy.
Yeah, good. Okay, so let's see. Here are a couple of more. Are there truly non-GMO sources available? Personally, I can no longer digest it comfortably. Used to love it. Well, yes, there are definitely non-GMO sources. Anytime you see organic on the label, that's going to be non-GMO. That's going to be soybeans that aren't genetically modified. Right.
And there are a lot of soy products that aren't organic that are non-GMO, and they'll put that on the label it's their non-GMO soybeans. So most people don't want genetically modified soybeans. Yeah. It's just one thing that they're conscious of, and so we just see a lot of tofu and tempeh and so on that's made with organic soybeans, but it's very easy to avoid, like you say.
Yeah. And if you're really concerned about it, you can always get the non-GMO project verified soy products, because they do a lot of certifications, and they're really, really thorough, and they have a great thing going. So always buy those. Okay, so I'm just going to do a couple more, because I know that I didn't even ask you how long you can chat, but I figured like 30, 40 minutes would be great, and so kind of you to take time out of your busy day.
Oh, my pleasure.
All right, so let's see. There was a good one by, I'm just going to try to find it here, because it kind of summed up. Okay, here we go. So she says the short list to avoid soy is lectins, phytates, protease inhibitors, goitrogenic effect, soy, and estrogen. And soy crops are destructive, anti-nutrient. But basically it boils down to, it makes me feel terrible. So that was just like kind of a lot there. So it was the soy lectins, the phytates, the protease inhibitors, and the goitrogenic effect, soy and estrogen. So that, again, you know, it sounds like stuff that this person would get from some of these websites that are really, really anti-soy. So is there anything you want to say?
Oh, for sure. Okay. So it, you know, the whole thing about anti-nutrients, so we're talking about phytates, lectins, protease inhibitors. Those were, I think, the three anti-nutrients that she mentioned. And this is a huge in the paleo world to say don't eat any legumes, because all legumes contain these anti-nutrients, as do whole grains. And so don't eat legumes or whole grains because of the anti-nutrients they contain. But what people don't understand is that anti-nutrients are just compounds in plants that help the plants be viable and survive, basically. And these anti-nutrients allow the, you know, this little seed that's going to grow into a new plant. These anti-nutrients are there to protect the premature release of these compounds so that when they need to be released so that the new plant can grow, they're released appropriately. They're there to protect the plant from predators. There are all kinds of reasons why they're there. Mm-hmm. So let's look at them individually. Okay. First of all, phytates, for example. So phytates are the storage form of phosphorus in plant foods. Mm-hmm. And phytates are, they reduce the absorption of iron and zinc and calcium and so forth in plant foods. But again, what people don't realize is that phytates are reduced when we prepare food. So phytates are reduced by leavening. They're reduced by roasting, soaking, sprouting. You know, most of our food preparation, they're reduced by cooking. Mm-hmm. So most of our food preparation techniques reduce phytates. The other thing people don't recognize or appreciate about phytates is they are powerful antioxidants. Mm-hmm. They protect DNA. They are anti-tumor promoting. Mm-hmm. The benefits of phytates truly go on in terms of health. They even protect bones. Mm-hmm. They reduce risk of kidney stones. Mm-hmm. So what we know is that having a moderate amount of phytates in the diet is actually hugely protective. Mm-hmm. You don't want an overabundance. So as a vegan, you don't want to sprinkle bran on everything. Bran is like a phytate bomb. It's really high in phytates. So you don't want to be consuming a lot. But spinach is high in phytates. There are a lot of foods that paleo people eat that are high in phytates. Mm-hmm. So soy is no different. Now, what we can generally say is usual methods of preparation reduce it. It's not a huge issue if you're not taking concentrated fiber out of foods and sprinkling it all over everything. Mm-hmm. And in fact, phytates can be quite protective. Mm-hmm. When we look at lectins, well, beans, a lot of foods have some lectins. Beans are particularly rich in lectins. And lectins are, you know, they're type of protein that can cause what we call a agglutination of blood cells, which means can cause blood cells to stick together. Mm-hmm. And if you ate, for example, some sprouted kidney beans,
okay,
or some kidney beans that were undercooked, maybe cooked for 15 or 20 minutes and weren't cooked well enough, you would get acute food poisoning sort of feeling. Mm-hmm. You would be violently ill. You would throw up. Mm-hmm. And feel like you're going to die for about 3 or 4 or 5 hours. Mm-hmm. And then you'd survive. There's one study in the literature showing that legumes has a negative effect on human health. And it was a study looking at what happened to people in a hospital who were fed undercooked kidney beans. So that's the only study I know of. Every other study of legumes shows it to be beneficial. So why is it beneficial when it contains these dangerous lectins? Well, lectins are destroyed 100% by cooking. Mm. We cook beans. We eat cooked beans.
Okay.
And so, you know, half an hour of cooking beans, the lectins are gone. They're not there anymore. What we know about beans, blue zones, acid test, every single blue zone, bar none, the only food that is absolutely common throughout every blue zone is beans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've looked at studies when to quantify the benefits of beans. Eating 2/3 of an ounce of beans, 20 grams of beans a day, reduces mortality 7 to 8%.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if people ate a whole cup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're talking a tablespoon and a half. It increases longevity.
Mm-hmm.
Everything we have about beans shows that they're protective to human health. They're our most potent source of fiber. They're wonderful sources of trace nutrients. They're great sources of plant protein. They are cheap. They're easy. You know, it's just they're really wonderful foods. And to say you shouldn't eat beans because of lectins is absolutely asinine. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, and again, soybeans, lectins. Yes, soybeans and soybeans contain protease inhibitors. But again, cooking destroys those protease inhibitors.
Mm-hmm.
If you're eating raw soybeans, like just sprouted, there'll still be some protease inhibitors there. But if you're cooking them, there's not going to be, and even sprouting reduces very, very significantly. Mm-hmm. So anti-nutrients in, and lectins, it's funny, I did a little search, you know, looking at positive, negative. They're definitely negatives. If you're consuming massive amounts of lectins, you're not cooking your foods.
Right.
But, or your beans, but there are different types of lectins, and some lectins have huge anti-carcinogenic potential. Mm-hmm. So perhaps little bits may end up being reasonably protective.
Okay.
So to say, you know, I'm not going to consume soy because of these anti-nutrients, all plant foods contain anti-nutrients. They're there to protect the plant.
Mm-hmm.
But plant foods also contain phytochemicals and antioxidants and fiber.
Stuff that protects us.
Yeah, are hugely protective. And so it's just important to understand these things.
Yeah.
It's absolutely the evidence on legumes, including soy, which is a legume, by the way,
yes,
is just overwhelming. And so if you find soy doesn't agree with you, you're eating organic soy, you're not consuming that super heavily processed soy,
yeah.
You're eating a little bit of edamame and you still find it bothers you, cut it out. Eat other legumes. That's fine.
Yeah.
But don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah.
Do a little bit of test on yourself if in fact you would like to consume mm-hmm. some, because it gives just so much more diversity to a plant-based diet. It's beans don't make quite the same meat replacement as does tofu. If you're,
right.
You're marinating and making some sort of beautiful, you know, triangle tofu that's encrusted with, you know, nuts or something, you're trying to make a beautiful main dish. It's just very versatile.
Right, and it helps.
It's a shame.
Yeah, it helps people eat this way and have this way of eating be really sustainable and satisfying, because it does have that more of sort of texture that meat eaters are used to. So it can really help you eat this way in the long run.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think it's just sad when people feel they have to eliminate a food that has been such a helpful food for people who are trying to eat plant-based. It makes no sense, and it's just a tragedy that we're eliminating foods that we don't have to eliminate, that we actually enjoy and would like to have as part of our diet. And the other thing that I should say that we didn't talk about is the concern for men that, you know, they'll grow man boobs.
Yes, good. Let's do it, because that was a concern too. Yep.
So we have two studies showing the sort of men that started to get these feminizing characteristics mm-hmm. when consuming soy. And in both cases, you're not going to believe this, but the one study, the guy was eating 18 servings of soy a day. And in the other study, I think he was consuming 14. So it's not a good idea to consume 14 to 18 servings of
anything. Right, yeah.
We want variety in the diet. And soy contains phytoestrogens. Consuming that amount is not a good plan. But there have been studies looking at children who were raised with soy formula, at young boys who were fed soy foods their whole lives, at, you know, all of these kinds of things. And there's really no significant differences in any of the parameters in terms of testosterone production, any of that. And I would encourage people to go to a website called nutritionfacts.org.
Oh, yes, Michael Greger's website. Wonderful.
Yes.
Yep.
And do a little, you know, a little search
yeah.
to see, because he'll present some of these studies,
mm-hmm.
and it's quite interesting. Look at testosterone levels, vegans versus, you know, look at soy and health. Look at those things,
yeah.
and you'll get some fun results.
Yeah, and from studies that are done only on humans as well. So what is the recommended soy intake then for, you know, a plant-based eater? What is the daily consumption recommendation?
So I'm really, really glad that you asked that question, because like any food, what we're finding and what the recommended, if you look at Asia, which they are common soy consumers, the sort of usual intakes and sort of the range of intakes is around 2 to 4 servings for adults a day. So I would say for children, You would want to be looking more at probably one or two servings of soy a day.
Is a serving like a half of a cup generally?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, a half a cup of tofu would be about a serving. A half okay. a cup of edamame would be about a serving.
So one so to two for kids under, is that under like 13 or is that under?
Yeah, that okay. that would probably be a reasonable, because we're looking at body size. So once you're right. the same size as an adult, then it's, okay. you know, we're, yeah.
And then for yeah. an adult, it's, you said 3 to 4.
Yeah, sort of our, what right. I would say is a max. Because I do know of small children who have had precocious puberty or whatever, started bleeding a little bit very, very early mm-hmm. with extreme intakes of soy. So say 10 or 12 servings mm-hmm. a day in children, not a good plan. And to be honest, it's not that difficult to reach those numbers if you're having, you know, because we've got soy everything. We've got right. soy ice cream. We've got soy yogurt. We've got soy milk.
I mean, in non-vegan foods as well, because the processed soy isolates, they put in a lot of stuff because it's a cheap filler.
That's right. So that's right.
That'd be a lot easier to get more than you need, probably with a diet that's a standard American diet, than you would with like a really healthy plant-based diet.
That's right. And I would like to mention one other thing, because I think some people would like to, say, switch from soy milk to almond milk mm-hmm. or a non-soy, so they have room for the tofu and tempeh and, you know, the soy products that they really love. And so for those people, one of the concerns about other milks is that they really don't have many nutrients. Right. Soy milk has a lot of nutrients. Yeah. It has a lot of protein and it has trace minerals and so forth. But these other milks, like almond milk, are 5 almonds in 1 cup of water and mm-hmm. a bunch of added calcium and so on. But in terms of trace minerals and protein, there's almost nothing there. It's mm-hmm. a gram of protein, if mm-hmm. that. And so the way that I deal with that, because I do use almond milk, sometimes I make my own, but if I'm using a commercial unsweetened almond milk, for mm-hmm. example, what I would do is purchase a 2-liter container and I would add in, and I would use my Vitamix or Blendtec mm-hmm. or whatever kind of blender you have, and blend in anywhere between 3/4 and a cup of hemp seeds.
Ah.
And so you're making, you know what, it's just easy, because when you make almond milk fresh from scratch, you have to squeeze with the mm-hmm. almond milk. But with hemp seeds, it blends right in. You do nothing. Mm-hmm. You just blend it in, pour it back into the container. I'll put 2 or 3 cups of milk mm-hmm. into the blender of the almond milk, put the 3/4 cup of hemp seeds, whatever, blend it, and then pour it back into the container, shake it up, and right. you're good to go.
Without squeezing it out or anything, just add it in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I love it.
And it brings the protein up to about the same amount as soy milk. Uh-huh. And it brings up all of the trace minerals. It gives you some essential fatty acids, because the essential fatty mm-hmm. acid content of hemp seeds is excellent. Mm-hmm. It's about 3 to 1. It's a wonderful source yep. of essential fatty acids. Tremendous trace minerals, a very, very high amount of protein. And it's got some, you know, stearidonic acid, which helps with the conversion of mm-hmm. essential fatty acid. It's just a wonderful food.
That's
and so
great,
to,
great
you know, to spike the milk that way, and it takes just a minute to do. I mean, you literally just whiz it for about a minute, pour it back, shake it, and then you've got uh-huh. your 2 liters good to go for several days.
Uh-huh. That's an awesome plan. It's a great tip. So, now, I wanted to just to touch before we wrap up. So if people want to go look at these newer studies that have come out in 2013, the studies that you referenced in the beginning, so where can they go to find these studies? Do you know the name of the studies off the top of your head?
Well, I will tell you one place that makes it really easy.
Okay.
I think I actually have an article with references on my website, mm-hmm. but there's another website called veganhealth.org.
Okay.
And veganhealth.org is a website that's run by Jack Norris, who's
yeah.
also a dietitian. And he wrote an article that is completely, every research study on soy you can imagine is everything's referenced and it's all there. That makes it really easy.
Okay.
So veganhealth.org, soy.
That's a great website.
Yeah, and then yep. the other thing that you can do is just go on to PubMed,
okay.
which is where all these scientific articles, and just put soy and breast cancer and watch what comes up.
Okay.
You know, the studies are, for the last 5 years, the human studies are just, there are so many.
Awesome. And so that makes it easy. And then if for anybody who wants to see or hear more about Brenda Davis or see what she's all about, go to her website, brendadavisrd.com. And again, I highly recommend everybody read this book, Becoming Vegan. You'll learn a ton, and it's just really well done. It's like a textbook. I love it. It's right up my alley. I love nutrition, and it's just, I love how you broke everything down. So
yeah, and Molly, for people that aren't aware, we've done two versions of that book. So you have the comprehensive edition, which is about 600 pages, and it's got a big chunk of references.
Yeah.
We did a mini version, which is about 300 pages, which is really just the information, and it's a little more consumer-friendly. And so if you just want to do a read and not have to go, you know, have all the referencing, it's called the Express Edition.
Okay.
So we've got the Express Edition, and then there's the comprehensive edition for the nutrition geeks and for the dietitians and physicians who need to have the, you know, the references.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you so much for doing what you do. It's so important and necessary. And you're a wealth of knowledge. And I really love talking to you today. I think that you've really cleared up a lot of areas for people. And I know that my people are just going to love it. And anybody else who stumbles across this, I'm going to put this up on my blog and send it out in one of my Saturday emails. So I know that people will gain a ton from this. So Thank you so much. Is there anything else that you want to add?
Well, Molly, I really appreciate you having me, and thank you for what you're doing to try to help educate people, and just love what you're doing.
So
what I'll just add is I'll say that I'm a registered dietitian. I've been a dietitian for almost 35 years. And I the reason that I do what I do is because I am very passionate about people making more conscious choices so we can preserve this planet for future generations, mm-hmm. and so that we can protect animals from the horrendous pain, suffering, and death that they're going through. Mm-hmm. And so I want desperately for everyone who wants to do plant-based for all the right reasons to succeed brilliantly.
Yeah.
Every vegan that fails to achieve great health, mm-hmm. it becomes exhibit number one for why you're justified in eating meat.
Yeah.
And that's just not, you know, it's avoidable. So that's why I've written the books I've written.
Yeah.
I want to help support people in making choices that will really help them achieve optimal health and live long and wonderful lives. So that's really what it's all about.
Yeah, that's
so
right.
So thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I agree, because there's a lot of people who will switch from meat, just regular meat, like standard American diet, to paleo, to even vegetarian, who go vegan, and who end up not feeling well. And there's a ton of people who go down that road, and oftentimes that can be avoidable, because there are absolutely, you know, there is obviously a way to do this that's so health promoting and will make you so just feel good and vibrant. But we got to make sure that we're doing it right, and we're getting all the good stuff that we need to get, just like on any diet, just like any
absolutely.
Way of eating.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Agreed.
Well, thank you so much. And I will send you the link to this when I have it all up, and I'll let you see it before it goes live. So thanks again,
great.
Brenda, for your time.
Yeah,
I really
thanks,
appreciate
Molly.
It. Okay.
Yeah, thank
have a great
you.
Day.
Take care.
Okay.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoy this podcast, I would love it if you could rate and review it. That would mean a lot. And if you want to learn more about our whole food plant-based meal plans, head on over to our website, cleanfooddirtygirl.com, and check them out. You can also pick up a ton of plant-based recipes and resources and get inspired to celebrate human imperfection, because none of us are perfect. None of us, promise. And isn't that a relief? Oh my gosh. Okay, have a beautiful week, and I'll talk to you again soon.
Dreamer, come alive. Come alive in my body.